Animal shelters are over capacity, even though intake numbers are still below pre-pandemic 2019. Adoption interest is waning, and with 60% of animal intake being stray, shelters can improve their outcomes dramatically by reuniting lost pets with their families. Today, we have Abby Moore and Kristen Hassan of Petco Love Lost talking about their new Lost and Found workbook that offers solutions for increasing the number of lost pets reunited. A few years ago, Petco Love conducted a study that revealed that about one in three pets go missing in their lifetime. And I was surprised by that number because it's really high. And I was curious, why do you think that is?
I think the main point is we're talking about animals. They are mobile creatures. They have legs, they have instincts, they have internal will and like to explore. And then combine that with our lifestyles as human beings, where we're, you know, constantly going in and out of doors, we're moving, we're traveling, we're entrusting the care of our pets to other people. We have dog walkers. There are just so many opportunities for our pets to go missing. What I think is really, really important about that statistic is that we should all be really comfortable with the fact that this happens. And instead, it's stigmatized. We all feel like if a pet goes missing, it's a personal failure. If someone's pet goes missing, they're no longer a good pet owner. They're not a good adopter. And we really need to turn that around because it's such a common occurrence, which is why we talk about that statistic all the time. One in three pets go missing. I don't know about you. I am the one in three, at least on this call. I had a pet, my much, much beloved dog go missing many, many, many years ago. First dog I ever had as an adult. And my story did not have a happy ending. So I feel like it's really important that we kind of normalize this and also normalize it in a way that allows us to talk about prevention and talk about what to do when and if a pet does go missing.
I love that you talk about the importance of normalizing it and that we have been putting a pretty ugly label on people who lose their pets. I have also lost a pet, and I fortunately, my pet was microchipped, and I was at work and I got a phone call from my vet's office, and someone had found my dog running around the neighborhood because I had some work being done at my house, and one of the workmen just left the door ajar and out my dog went. And I never even knew that he was missing. I didn't even know. So fortunately for me, somebody was able to pick him up, take him to a veterinary office, have him scan for microchip. And I never had that horrible feeling of anxiety looking for him because I didn't even know he was missing until I got the phone call. But I remember the feeling of, oh, wow. If this can happen to me, somebody that works in animal welfare, it really kind of made me stop and think, we have no business judging people who lose their pets. That's really unfair and it's not real. And historically, when you look at how we have evolved as a society, I did some research several years ago about the origins of animal welfare. And if you go to England today, you can still see areas in communities called pinfolds, which is where, you know, somebody's pet, somebody's cow, somebody's dog, horse gets lost in the community. And everybody knows you just take the animal down to the pinfold and leave them there. And then if you're missing your animal, you just go down there and, oh, there it is. And then you just pay a little fee and you get it back. And that was, their actual, you know, communities were built around that, and community people, individuals in that community thought nothing of just taking that animal down there. And that was just how we did things. And that was normal. That was just normal society. And so I think somehow we lost that on this journey, that it's normal that animals go missing and it doesn't mean you're a bad pet owner. It means.
Yeah. Absolutely. I love that you brought up that history, because that really, it is the origins of modern animal welfare. And now it's, of course, it's much more complicated. There's, you know, a larger population, larger cities, and shelters are overcrowded for a number of reasons. It's a little more difficult than just like going and finding your pet in the one little pinfold. But yes, absolutely. That is what we were all, that's where we all came from. That's our history.
I really appreciate what you're both saying. And it's something we're not talking about enough, is that the vast majority of animals entering, particularly government shelters, it's around 60% in open admission shelters, are lost or stray. But the ideas we've attached to those words don't necessarily reflect reality. I've worked on the in the border areas of US and Mexico for about a decade. And, you know, we know that in outside of the US and a couple of other countries, animals living among us is really normal. And animals live in communities and various neighbors take care of them. And then you cross the border and you have an entirely different set of roles. And we don't do a very good job explaining those roles to people. And instead we often just impound their animals. And a lot of this was, the impetus for a lot of this was rabies in the mid-19th century, and the fear of rabies, but it has been a dramatic change. And so I think when we're thinking about lost pets, the first thing as a government animal shelter director that we mean when we say they're lost or stray, and we, what we actually mean is that they were just moving around the community. And so if we can let go of some of those assumptions, we can do a lot better job getting them home. Some of the barriers to getting lost pets home are, you know, I think number one are just fines, fees, and the fear of engaging with the system. People are scared when their pet gets impounded. They think they could be in trouble. They may get citation. It is not infrequent to hear people worry that they'll go to jail because their pet got loose. And so I think one of our first jobs is just to change people's understanding of why an animal shelter exists and make it much, much easier for them to get their pets back. I wish we had instead of an overnight drop box, I wish we just had an overnight pickup system where, like, anytime you realize your pet is gone, you can just, you know, go grab it. Like the pinfolds, I think, is a really, really good example, because, you know, they look like round circular pens. Like, you just show up and get your pet back. And now we have these increasingly complex systems that are housing animals for longer and longer periods of time. What I think is so, what keeps me up at night about lost pets is that 1 in 100 shelters have even one staff member allocated to getting lost pets home. I mean, it is like the most under-resourced, understaffed position in animal shelters. And it doesn't make any logical sense when we know most of the animals coming in are lost or stray. So I really hope we can just have an entire like revolution in the way we're handling this issue.
That is such a good point. And sorry to just jump in, but I got really excited. That is such a good point. And it really sort of drives home the, like, my own personal journey. For, you know, 19 years was with adoptapet.com, and I was obsessed with pet acquisition. I ate, slept, and breathed pet acquisition. How do we get people to adopt more pets? How do we adopt, you know, more difficult to adopt types of pets out? How do we do a better job with our technology of marketing pets? And then when I heard that 60% of pets in shelters are stray, which often just means lost, I knew that, wow, there is opportunity to make so much impact outside of pet acquisition. And in a time when we can see through publicly available Google search data that interest in adoptions is the lowest it's been in many years, that we just can't adopt our way out of this problem. The easiest way for us to get a handle on the overcrowding in shelters is to just simply pay attention and make an effort to getting those pets that are owned back to their families.
Why do you believe shelters struggle so much with reunification efforts?
Well, I think, so part of it is just that they're not resourcing that function. Like, they're not trying. And that is partly just because the system really is set up to take in animals. It was not set up to get them out of shelters. And because of the stigma against people that lose their pets, I think we have just a culture in shelters that doesn't prioritize returning lost pets. And in fact, we kind of meet people who come in to get their pets with suspicion. Anime somebody, God forbid you're a two-time offender, you know, your animal has showed up at the shelter twice for being lost. So I have this dog I just got from a shelter I was working with, and she's a climber, an amazing climber. Like, she can climb anything, and she gets out and goes and hangs out with like the kids in the neighborhood. Or the other day she got out, walked herself to the local like rib place, got ribs from the dumpster. I don't know how she got in that, and then walked them home. And I mean, this is me, right? So it's really been teaching me a lot, because if I were in a different place where animal control, I think, was like quicker and more worried about lost pets, like, she'd be impounded daily. And you know, it leaves us all in this position to wonder, like, what do we need to do differently to really help? I think the word normalize is right, but help get people to react sooner, to realize when their pet is gone, to realize it's probably like a block away, is the other thing. Your pet's probably in the dumpster getting some ribs, or like around the corner, or in the case of a cat, hiding under a bush, or even inside your house. And so I think we need to like sort of help people react appropriately. I know we'll talk about Petco Love Lost in a moment, but I think the quicker that we can get pets home without them going to the shelter, because once they're in the shelter system, it is so hard to get out. When somebody enters any institution, it's going to take longer for them to get out. And so like my goal has really become to keep them out of the shelter by teaching people how to react more appropriately when they find out their pet is lost, or when they find a lost pet. I think the system, it's just government animal sheltering, is going to take more time to fix than tomorrow. And so the best thing we can do is help people get pets home without them entering.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely spot on. And you know, I think it just starts with changing our paradigms. And that's why I keep saying over and over again that the easiest thing for us to do is to return owned pets to their families. Because I think it's just, we as animal welfare folks get into this groove where we're just so focused on, you know, putting out the fires and it just feeling overwhelmed, that we have to take a step back and look at our data and look at what our data is telling us. And in this case, our data is telling us that a lot of these pets potentially are owned and have owners who may be looking for them, and adoptions are down. And so like, let's just turn our attention a little bit. And like Kristen said, let's focus some of our manpower on making sure that those pets are going home.
I think it's fair to say shelters need more resources for unification. And that's why this workbook is, I think, an essential tool. And I read through it, and I love the way that it's laid out. I love the critical thinking paths that you all took and the exercises you put together. So let's talk, how did this workbook come to be?
So at Petco Love, you know, what I do, most of my work is with Petco Love Lost, trying to get the word out. And, you know, Petco Love Lost, of course, is a database of lost and found pets. It's a place where people can post and search for lost and found pets. And one of the cool tools that we use is image recognition technology to make matches. So I came in like, I need to grow this. And who better for me to recruit, to help me get the word out and to understand what the needs are than Kristen Hassan, who is my hero in animal welfare and knows everything that there is to know. So we've been really working on getting the word out and going community by community, and also getting shelters to replace their lost and found reporting, you know, their public reporting, with Petco Love Lost, which we'll talk about in a second. But this workbook, I need to give credit where credit is due, 100% written by Kristen, and is brilliant. So now that I have said the things that Kristen wouldn't say about herself,
I'll let Kristen
talk about the workbook.
That's so nice. And I think, Catherine, you and I have been in this long enough to know that the thing about this moment, I think, that is different is that everybody is freaking new. like something like 80% of shelter and rescue workers started during the pandemic. And so I traveled to 22 large shelters in about a year. And it was shocking to me how little institutional knowledge there was. Like I really am worried about that, because the lessons we learned over many years it's like folklore, they're not being passed down. People exited the field too quickly. And so this workbook, Abby and I, we did Los Angeles. We spent a lot of time going around Los Angeles and signing shelters up and, sort of making the case of why they should use Pecola Blast and why they needed to change their intake practices. And what we found is that even though the leadership absolutely bought in, the shelter workers didn't even know the basics of lost and found. And so this workbook really is intended to provide an overview to staff and volunteers at any level to help them even understand what the problem is, how to think about it. And then we made it really interactive because I also think there's a lot of new managers in animal shelters who maybe don't know how to do staff training that's really engaging. And so we tried to create exercises to that end. And this was really inspired by Abby and I, and one of our colleagues were in the Los Angeles area at a large shelter. And we were there for our visit, but we happened to run into a young man who was trying to get his dog back. And he had gone into, he had brought his dog, I believe his dog had come in, might have come in as a, I think it came in as a stray, but it was because he had to go into treatment, and he did intentionally have the dog impounded so he could go in. He was experiencing a mental health crisis and
unhoused.
And he was also unhoused. And so he's trying to get his dog back, and they were going to charge him something like $500 to get the dog back. And they were so unkind to him. Just seeing the interactions, like the staff wasn't seeing this person in front of them who loved his dog. They were just sort of like moving through, and they're like, you don't have the money, you can't get the dog. So we intervened, he got his dog back, they reduced the fees. And that dog, I've never seen a dog happier to see his person. I've never seen him happier. And the whole time he was there, what was like really heartbreaking is he was trying to volunteer. He was like, I really want to volunteer. I really want to help. And he was just such a sweet guy. And the dog was so happy to be back with him. And it was just this like moment, I think, for all of us that was like, we have to do something here. Like, for this to be the case, like this is a human rights issue. It's an animal rights issue. That dog probably would have stayed there a year, or it would have died there. It was a young pit bull dog. So I think the workbook was really inspired by that and a few other situations where we just see how fundamentally broken the system is, not because any one shelter or individual is bad. It's the system itself. And so that was why we wanted to create this tool.
If a person shows up at the shelter and they want to get their dog back, they care enough about that animal to come. And if you are operating a shelter and you do not have the ability to waive return to owner fees, that is something that every animal welfare organization that has a government contract, that is something you should negotiate in your contract, because being able to say, you know what, take the dog and we're so glad that you came. And because you're paying, just from a financial analysis perspective, you're paying an employee and a half to care for that animal while they're in your shelter. You're feeding them. You are managing a population of animals where you are worried about communicable illness. And so it is in your best interest, if you're operating a shelter, to send that animal home, because that means you have less animals in the shelter that can get sick. That means that you can have a higher staff to animal ratio. That means so many things, and it's financially advantageous for you to send that animal home. But if your frontline team doesn't understand that, or doesn't see that in the sort of the vision and the mission of the organization, they don't understand how important that is. it is very much like you said, Kristen, our system is, you know, you do this in order to get your dog back. You need to pay a fine. You don't have the money to pay the fine. Well, then you come back when you have the money to pay the fine. So then the dog is going to sit there another 2 weeks while the person goes to find money to pay the fine. And we already know there's already barriers for that. And this is sort of where diversity, equity, inclusion work comes into play, because essentially it's sort of criminalizing poverty. So this young man that you all saw who was unhoused, who wanted to get his dog back, he would have so many more barriers. I'm just so happy that you were there to advocate for him and his dog. And it's a story that unfortunately happens every day in shelters. And so I do feel that in order for a shelter to have a successful lost and found program, I think there's some non-negotiables. So if you could say, you know, what do you think are the non-negotiables for shelters? I mean, for me, I think the non-negotiables for shelters to have a good lost and found program is the ability to waive return to owner fees, having that discretion. Like, to me, that's going to change your world. It's going to empower your staff at the front desk. It's going to let them have autonomy and pride in their work because they can make those decisions about returning that pet. But what are some other things that you think are essential?
I would take that one a step further and say that our default should be that there aren't fees, and that fees should be added as an exception, not the rule. So, like, you know, a lot of shelters now, if you pick up your pet in the first 72 hours, there are no reclaim fees, so that they're incentivizing people to come more quickly. And I think, you know, fees in some cases are appropriate. If you have a repeat person who picks up their dog after a week and a half, it makes sense that there would be some fees imposed, but those fees are a huge barrier for people. And I think it is criminalizing poverty. I mean, those poor people's animals are who they, those animals get stuck in shelters for no good reason. Catherine, it's a really important point that this is a taxpayer issue too. Like, we're subsidizing shelter separating families, and we shouldn't be doing that. I think, like, that for me, the bar is like, are you doing anything to get in the way of the bond between a person and an animal who love each other? If you are, in the case of lost pets or anything else you're doing, stop doing that thing. And there are a lot of those things. And I think back to the new staff, we wrote this workbook largely because we're seeing so many barriers being erected even now. Like, this problem is actually maybe heading in the wrong direction. And that is really concerning, that we know the one change is not that there's more animals entering the system, it's that they're leaving more slowly. So we have to do more to make it easier to get them home.
Yep. That's a really good point. I think also, you know, and I'm going to sound like an infomercial for Petco Love Lost, but I really, really do believe in it. The nature of lost and found necessitates that there is one single database that's being used to reunite animals, right? Like, if you post your lost pet somewhere, and I found your pet and I post that pet somewhere else, we're not going to make the connection. So it's really important that we have all lost pets and all found pets in one single database so that we can make maximum reunions. And that is why we are not only having, you know, shelters send their pet data into Petco Love Lost, but also use Petco Love Lost for their public reporting so that everybody is using the same database. We're also integrated with Ring, you know, Amazon's Ring camera app neighbors. We're working on an integration with Nextdoor. So we're trying to make sure that no matter where you have found, you know, you've posted your lost or found pet, somehow it's coming into our database where we can use our technology to make a reunion. I also want to talk a little bit about one specific case study that I think all shelters can learn from, all animal welfare organizations can learn from, and that is Pima County. I want to give a huge shout out to Monica Dangler and Caitlin Pappas. Sorry, Caitlin. There's so many K's on this call. They decided about a year ago that they weren't going to make a big change by continuing to do the same things. And so they piloted a whole new program with lost and found pets. And one of the aspects of it was replacing all of their technology that they were using for lost and found with Petco Love Lost. That's one major part of it. But they also did some really incredible things that allowed the public to help more. They invited the public to help. So when someone comes in with a found pet, they're giving this person options. They're saying, hey, can you take the pet home with you? And we won't even run this pet through our system, and we'll send you home with a bunch of resources. Or can we, vaccinate the pet now? You take the pet home for 3 days so that this pet has less of a chance of infecting other pets in the shelter or becoming sick themselves. Or they have something called finder to foster, where they put the pet in the shelter for the hold period. And then after that, the person has agreed to foster the pet. And then the last result is like, okay, stop, drop, and post, where they, leave the pet at the shelter, but still post the pet on Petco Love Lost and other social media. And at the end of a year, what they found was three things. Number one, they doubled their community RTO rate. They nearly doubled it. It was 16%. It's now at 29%. So that's incredible. I do not know one organization that could not benefit from doubling their RTO rates. Number two, they're preventing pets from coming into the shelter. And we can see that because the national average shows that stray intake is increasing by 6%. Theirs only increased by 1%. And they're a big intake shelter. They took in like 20,000 pets last year. And third, they're saving their staff lots of time and being able to repurpose that time for more life-saving activities. So they used to handle like 50 to 60 calls a day, calls and emails a day about lost and found pets. Now that's 10 to 15. And those 10 to 15 are people saying, I know my pet is in your shelter because I saw my pet on Petco Love Lost. So I think if all shelters did those kinds of things, like really opened up their process and asked the community to help, I think we could all see so much progress.
It's so inspiring just to hear that. I had read about the work that Monica and her team had been doing with Petco Love Lost, and it's incredible. What do you think, why are shelters reluctant to get on board with Petco Love Lost? Is there a barrier, or is there a concern, or why wouldn't a shelter want to do it?
I think there's a couple of things. Three. Number one, I think we're just not super well known yet. Number two, I think there's a lack of understanding of what we do. And sometimes there's a feeling of like, oh, it's really complicated because there's this image recognition technology and I don't understand, artificial intelligence, whatever. You don't have to. It is really just a database, for lost and found pets. Number three, I think there's just a resistance to change. And it's human nature, it's organizational nature, that when we're used to certain processes, it is very difficult to get an entire ship to sort of change course and enter new waters. And, I want to give Kristen a chance to answer this question too, because Kristen is out there talking to shelters all the time about Petco Love Lost. But I do also want to say, we're seeing a lot less resistance. We're seeing, I feel like in the last several months, we've gotten huge momentum, and literally almost every single organization in the United States is sending their pets into Petco Love Lost. And now we're seeing a lot of organizations start to use us for their lost and found reporting too.
Well, I was also kind of a skeptic when I started working with Petco Love, and they wanted me to focus on this project. I was like, I don't think this thing really, I don't know if it really works. Why not just use your shelter software? Because people are busy and inundated with all these technology options. I think over the last year and a half, I've gotten to work with Abby and Suzanne and the team. I've become a real believer because of what I said, I think at the beginning, which is that we need solutions that don't require that don't require the shelter to be a third party. The shelter as this intermediary should be a last resort, but we haven't caught up. We're still operating as if it's the old days when you have to take the animal there because there's no way to get it home otherwise. technology makes that completely unnecessary. And I don't think we've entirely made that connection. And once I saw, I think at Pima, the thing that really surprised me was how many more reunifications were happening without the shelter ever being involved. They didn't take in the animal. They didn't know anything. And I think then we have to let go of our God complex and allow that to happen. Like, shelters are scared not to let the pets in because then they can't see them and, you know, make sure they should go back to their owner. And so we've got to let go of that part of it. But as shelters are doing it, we just did a training with like all of Texas and everybody was like, yeah, of course. If you're on the fence, I encourage everybody to go. Imagine you've lost your pet in your own community and try to get it home. It's a freaking nightmare. Like, it is like 20 platforms, Facebook groups. I mean, it's endless. And most of the websites are completely incomprehensible. Like, they haven't been updated in a long time. They're really confusing. And they tell people like all the barriers up front. So if you weren't terrified before, you will be now. And then go use Petco Love Lost. Like, use it for practice with your own pet. And you just, we don't really have to say anything else. You can feel the difference in those two processes. And one of them is built for, you know, the 1850s, and one is built for today.
So I just want to thank you both so much for talking about this issue.
About half the cats that entered shelters last year were kittens. Kittens are generally not getting reclaimed, but they're always factored into these RTO rates. So actually, cat RTO rates are going up. They're getting better, as are cat adoption rates. So I think we are seeing some positive changes there. And just to also say about Suzanne, this is her legacy project. Suzanne's been leading Petco Love along with Abby and the leadership team for, gosh, she's been there a long time. And I think this was like the thing that she wanted to get done. And Petco Love is a nonprofit. It's not, nobody's making money off of the project. It's really like her goal was like, get this central database and we can end the problem. Like, we just end it. And if we did that, we would not have euthanasia for space and animal shelters anymore. You know, we wouldn't have the disease we're having, Catherine, that you mentioned earlier. So, you know, this really is her passion project. And I think I'm really just proud to be here to help realize it. And so grateful for you letting us come and talk about it.
Yeah. Thank you so much. And yes, I just will piggyback on that by saying, in fact, one of the reasons why we have Petco Love Lost is because we don't think that anybody should benefit and make money from, you know, people suffering while their animals are lost. We want to make sure that there's always a 100% free option. We're also fiercely, fiercely protective of people's personal data. We don't share it with anybody. So, you know, all of our materials are available in 8 different languages. We just want to make sure that everybody, no matter who you are, feels comfortable reclaiming their pet. And thank you so much for having us on here to talk about this. This has been super fun.